Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. I'm Wade Wegner.
And I'm Grigory Melnik.
So we've got a fabulous show today, as always, and it's wonderful to have Grigory on the show.
Thanks.
We're going to be talking through Wasabi.
Yes, Wasabi!
Which is one of the coolest code names, yeah. But basically it's auto-scaling within Windows Azure. And so you're part of the Patterns and Practices team, and you've put together a great application block that people can use. So we'll go through that in today's show. But first, as always, we're going to cover the news.
What's new?
And so first news item I had is actually a really good article by Rachel Appel, who I believe is a developer evangelist in the East region of the U.S., essentially walking through, hey, what are some of the core differences in building out applications, ASP.NET applications, and looking at running them in Windows Azure or Windows Server. And so she walks through a lot of the differences and some of the things that you have to be thinking about, such as, you know, making sure your applications are stateless, understanding some of the differences with storage and how you would collect diagnostic information, all the different things that you and I, who've been building for Windows Azure for a while, are just kind of used to. But if you think about the very large pool of ASP.NET developers out there that have never built or architected an application for Windows Azure, there are some differences between the two. And so this is actually a really good post that she's put together that walks through all these differences.
Nice.
So if you're an ASP.NET developer and you're familiar with developing for Windows Server, this is a nice introduction to what's different with Windows Azure.
Yeah, so it looks like the deployment topics are also included there. So that's
it's fairly comprehensive. We won't spend too much time on it, but you can click on the link in the show notes. The next one is actually the beauty of moving SQL Azure servers between subscriptions. And so this is actually a scenario that only recently, I can't exactly remember which release within the last 3 to 6 months from SQL Azure allowed this, but was not something that we've been able to do for, you know, since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice, and what's nice here is on this blog, the author has put together a number of scenarios that they've seen from enterprise customers that have really made this a useful feature. So another thing, so if you're not familiar with, you know, the ability to move between servers, you can see through the portal. They've actually exposed the API so that you can move the database, and here's some of the takeaways as well. So just a good post, some good information, and I particularly like how, you know, mapping it back to real world scenarios and examples from engagements with customers. All right, and the last news item I have too is how to programmatically find the deployments slot from code running in Windows Azure. What's interesting is I've had to do this quite a bit, and actually even within the Windows Azure PowerShell commandlets, there is a set of commandlets you can use to get the deployment slot and do different things, like, I don't know, if you wanted to do a VIP swap and first check, you know, which deployment it's in, like, am I in staging, am I in production, all those sorts of things. There are some commandlets that wrap up this capability and you can use with PowerShell. But what we've got in this post is actually all the code that you can use so that you can programmatically, from your own application, communicate with the management API and do the same sort of thing. So for those of us that don't have an innate need and love for PowerShell and really like using PowerShell, which I admit that I'm not often that excited to work with PowerShell, but
this is admin.
What's that?
You're not a sysadmin.
I am not a sysadmin. Although it is quite nice being able to just write a PowerShell script and have it in perpetuity, and just, you know, if I want to do a whole bunch of stuff, just run the script. So,
this has been available, the API. You could do it for a long time ago. This is just the post explaining how to do it programmatically.
Exactly. Yep. It's just cool. a nice post showing what to do. So, So I thought I would share that. So definitely take a look. And speaking of communicating with the management APIs, there's this great application block called the auto-scaling application block, or codename Wasabi. Do you still call it Wasabi publicly?
We call it Wasabi. We wanted to have a name which was unique enough so that when you do a search
it would
in
come
NuGet
up.
Public repository, or just, you know, bin for it, that it would come up and it would be, you know, easy and one of the first things. We made a mistake choosing something like Unity in the past when we built a DI container, and it wasn't very unique
wasn't
name,
unique.
As you can imagine. Yeah. So with Wasabi, actually, originally Wasabi was an acronym. Windows Azure Scaling Application Block, and then I was like for infrastructure there.
Yeah,
but, you know, that's a stretch. But the thing is that Wasabi sticked, and, you know, we're still calling it. We put it as a code name on MSDN, and that's the easiest way for you to go and look for it on NuGet.
If so,
you,
So, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but tell us, what was the impetus? Like, why did you build Wasabi?
I'm part of the, I'm a proud member of the Patterns and Practices team, as you already mentioned. Some of our viewers may already be familiar with our group, with our mm-hmm. team. We kind of live between the product groups, right? So we do not build a specific product. We look for pain points, we look for some gaps, we look for, you know, where can we make the developer's experience on our platforms more successful
yep.
and easier in a way. And what it turned out was that back, like in the summer last year, we were looking at all the different stories for the port of Enterprise Library, which is also in our portfolio, to Azure, because there's been a lot of people asking, saying, well, we want to use Nlib in Azure, what can we do? Well, Nlib by far can actually be, you know, the core of it can be used without much changes at all. So we said, well, what's so specific about Azure that we can, you know, make Nlib shine even better?
Yep.
And we went and we researched the My Windows Azure user voice
yep.
backlog.
Yep.
We looked through the forums. We talked to you, to the community. We've done the surveys, tons of user research. And what we concluded was that one of the biggest asks that seemed to be unaddressed by the product group for a long time was ability to autoscale.
Right.
So basically to you know, provision and deprovision these extra instances based on either schedules or based on the change in demand
right.
of your app.
Which I think is an important distinction, because a lot of customers know that they have specific patterns of usage, right? And so that they can just account for that on a schedule, like, hey, every day at 7 in the morning I need more capacity, but at 5 p.m. or something like that, I need less.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so you have this understanding of what your pattern, you know, your usage patterns are. You can account for it. The other one being, well, I don't know when people are going to use my service, and I don't want to be caught, you know, in a state where I don't have enough capacity out there, and I don't have enough instances running, and some way that programmatically my system can respond.
Exactly. So. And those are exactly the two main scenarios where you would autoscale preemptively
mm-hmm.
according to the schedule if you know your usage
yep.
patterns, and then you would autoscale what we call reactively
yep.
based on the changes in demand.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So, why don't we go ahead and we'll transition over to your machine, and you can start showing us some of it. There's different ways to get the application block. I think you've got a demo that you're going to
yeah,
show
Yeah, I would
and...
like to show the RI, yes.
Great.
To...
All right, let's do that.
Cool. Let me just remind our viewers what's the state of the art was before Wasabi appeared. So if you wanted to do autoscaling, if you wanted to do any scaling, you pretty much had three options, right? So you could go through the portal and then just, you know, scale manually, and that's one
of
the options.
Update your CFCFG, then.
Yeah, update your CFG with the new portal. Now you will get a slider, but it still
yep.
requires a human operator to go in to do that thing, and not the most effective solution there. The second option was to use one of the services, for now, the only services that are available are third party. There's nothing that's available from Microsoft, and the biggest issue with using the third-party service is for it to be able to autoscale your app. You have to surrender your management certificate
yep.
so that they could actually scale you up or down, right?
Yep.
And the third way was to actually write your own thing. So this is, you know, not necessarily rocket science what we've done here. You could have done it with the management API before. But again, that's kind of plumbing, and why should you be focusing on building your plumbing when you should be focusing on building your business
sure.
logic?
And arguably, too, I mean, when you're talking about scaling up and scaling down, you're probably doing it for a cost, you know, for cost savings. And I mean, that's a pretty critical area, something that you want to make sure that what's been written is pretty bulletproof and actually works the way that it's intended to work.
Yeah, that's a good point, because again, we, as being part of Microsoft, we went through pretty much all the same quality gates as any other product developer division would
yep.
go through. So all the rigorous testing, security reviews, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
et cetera, et cetera. So now, what's Wasabi? Okay, it's the auto-scaling application block. People familiar with the application blocks know that this is a component that you can host in your app, that you can, you know, configure and reuse. So it's not a service. It's not like the service bus or the
right.
ACL or caching that is currently available and it's built into the platform. You still need to do a little bit of work, but it's really, really easy. So you go and grab the block from NuGet. Here you just search for Wasabi. There's the block itself, and if you want to get the source, it's there too. By the way, we ship the tests as well along with the source, so it's we're actually proud of our tests. You can learn a lot about that.
I love the fact that you've got a NuGet specifically for the source as well, so I can just get the assemblies if I want them to, reference them, do it, or if I want to jump into it, make it.
And then since it's a block, since it's a reusable component, for it to actually be able to do something, you need to host it. So you can host it in a variety of ways. You can host it inside your worker role, and that's exactly what I'm doing here.
Okay.
So you can see it's a pretty straightforward. You know, you get your references, and then just in the start thing, right here, I'm going to end up calling the this method.
Okay.
Actually, hold on. This is stop. This is a stop on start. There we go.
Yep.
So I'm going to go and instantiate autoscaler. This is a classic way of how you get an instance of an autoscaler or anything else from Mtlib. I'm not going to dive into that. But the thing is that you just go and you start.
Nice.
Then, of course, this is not enough. You still need to configure. It's like, how does autoscaler know what to do? So this is an interesting part where you go and provide a lot of configuration. And there's
a question I wanted to ask around getting this instance of an autoscaler. I mean, when we think about this, my worker role, my web role, is potentially has, you know, 2, 3, 5, 10 instances running, right? And just to clarify what we're looking at here is this is to make sure that at any given point of time, one is responsible for the autoscaling, correct?
Yeah, you can have a dedicated worker role or even the web role, and it could be extra small. It's really not a heavy process.
Right.
Or you can have a shared one, and that's fine too. If you want for reliability to make sure that your autoscaler role itself is reliable, then you can have, you know, 2, 3 of those ones. And you have to be careful that only one of them actually makes the rule evaluation and the marching order. So we've taken
so
care of that.
So you've done this for us.
Yeah, we've done it for you. There is the Lees mechanism that you would just, you know, use in order to make sure that only one of the roles are
wonderful.
The margin ordering one.
One other quick question for you as well. This is a worker role, so you've got a role entry point with the worker role.
Yeah.
Do you see a lot of people using the web role and then just using the web role and the role entry point on the web role as another way to run or somewhere else to run?
I've seen people doing that, but I think most of the people ended up using just the worker role, but you can also do it on premises. That's another thing. You can run it just almost like a console app, and that's what I would encourage you to do if you want to play with it.
Yep.
We actually ship the autoscaler console app for you just to do exploratory testing.
Cool.
So now this is the, you know, the first step. Get the NuGet, you know, get an instance of the autoscaler run, but then you need to configure. There are two types of configuration. When you think about configuring application blocks, and in this case, two types. One is the operational configuration. This is where you would put all your connection strings, certificates, etc., where you define your targets. And by targets, we mean what is it that you want to scale, right? And then the other one is called business configuration. So this is where I'm going to show you. It's actually in XML. It's in my case, for the sample I'm running here, it's called default rule set XML. And this is what you see here is a set of rules.
Yep.
And we've tried to make the schema intuitive enough so you can just read it without, you know, even going into the docs.
Yes.
And you get all the, you know, IntelliSense support and all of that. So what you see here is that I have a bunch of constraint rules that, let's say this one, defines what my actions will be, and it's a default one, so there's nothing else defined here. There's no schedule, there's no nothing else.
Right, but I can say at the minimum, never scale below 2, never go above 5.
And that's the nature of constraint rules. You always set a minimum and maximum, and it's going to keep that regardless what other rules would say. The constraint rules always have a higher precedence than the other ones.
Yep.
Then I can have something like, here's another one interesting, where you want the additional instances for peak hours, so you can see that I'm attaching the timetable.
Yep.
And then very similar to the recurrences that you would do in Outlook or Exchange, you can just define your recurrences here, start, end, you know, which days, every month, the last day of the month, etc., with the offsets also here, and then you also put the actions.
Nice.
Right? And you can see that my action here is that I'm setting the range, again, minimum 3, maximum 6, so I allow for more right away, right? Now, then there is another bucket of rules.
You mind if I ask a quick question about
that? Go ahead.
So we showed the constraints before where it was min 2, max 5. Here now we've got a different rule that has min 3, max 6. So the slight difference, I didn't catch, are they targeting the same website?
They are, but what you'll see here, very good question, thanks for doing that. they actually have different ranks.
Okay.
So what you do if you have overlap, if you have rules that overlap the same target, because in this case you can see that I'm actually targeting my public website, and the previous one also had the public website defined,
with,
right?
With different,
but with this one, I effectively override by setting the rank higher.
Gotcha.
So the minimum rank is one, the higher it is, in fact, it's unbounded, so you can go as high as possible, and it's actually one of those tricks that we used if you want to temporarily disable rules, but you don't want to go and disable each of them and modify your set,
you can
introduce an additional one with the highest priority and just set it to one.
Nice.
I'll show you in my sample demo. In fact, that's what I have when I'm not showing the wasabi.
Exactly.
I don't want to be paying for all those instances because we have to pay for them too. Now the reactive rules are the one that would react to some conditional, some condition. And here's where I'm defining it. So I'm saying, hey, here's a heavy load. There's my condition effectively. Mm-hmm. So when this and this happened, you can do composite conditionals. You can do all these operands like greater, less, equal. And then this is what I'm watching for. So in this case, you can see that I'm watching for the number of rejected requests and also the average CPU for the public web for the last 20 minutes. Now, these are just the aliases. You'll have to define them somewhere, and we're going to get there at the bottom. But the thing is, if you look at this, this should be pretty easy for you to say what is that that you are reacting to.
Yep.
And then the rest is actions again. Here I'm using a different action. Instead of the range, I'm actually using the scale action, which tells me, hey, take this public website, which is my target, and scale it up by one. I can say minus one. I can say percentage. That's fine, too, so it could be relative if you want to, and so on. I can have multiple scale actions. So I can have different rules for, you know, I can have different rules, of course, and I can have different actions targeting different roles. Now, I can also have multiple actions that are of different nature than scaling. So, for example, I have some actions that are called throttle actions. And that's another useful feature of Wasabi, where instead of provisioning additional instances, maybe you already hit the ceiling, maybe you already hit your budget, you know that you cannot afford more than 10. You say, do whatever, but I'm not going to ever go above 10.
Yep.
But you're looking for some of your metrics here, you're looking for some of your diagnostic information, and it still looks like, you know, you're not managing to cope with that load sufficiently. So one of the things you could do, you can throttle. And there are different ways how you can throttle in your app. You can, for example, choose to serve pictures instead of videos. You can reduce the resolution. Or you can choose to temporarily disable the free access, the trial users, and only serve your paying users, the ones who
That's
you
great.
Want to ensure the SLA. So
That's
you can
great.
Do the same thing here. And then your action is effectively here that you change the setting, and then you'll have to watch for those. And, of course, you'll have to program for that in your application.
Yep.
So,
quick question. So I'm sure this is really, really well documented. And
oh, absolutely, yeah.
Question I have is, I noticed that this is in an XML file, which I'm assuming gets included as part of my CSPKG, and then when everything's running, it reads from it. Obviously, sometimes I might want to change some of these rules, and talk to me a little bit about how it would do that, given that it's an XML file part of the package.
It doesn't have to be stored in the file.
It doesn't
you
have
can
to
put
be
it in the blob storage.
Okay. So it can be externalized.
It can be absolutely externalized.
Got it.
And in the operational configuration, you would actually indicate, where is my other storage?
And then if I were to make changes to it, it can pick up the new.
The rules would be picked up dynamically.
Great.
If you make changes to your operational configuration, then you would need to reboot the thing.
Gotcha.
But the rules would definitely be picked up automatically. And this is at the bottom here. I'll show you. These are all the different operands or the metrics that I've defined here, and those are my aliases. But if you look at what they do, they actually go against the typical Windows
Azure
diagnostic,
the
perf counters here, which is fantastic. But we also define some additional things. So you can go and define your rules based on, for example, your current instance count.
Yep.
So you can have that in your expressions. You can also, something that proved to be extremely useful, to define rules based on the length of your Azure queues. How many messages do I have there? This is probably by far the CPU average utilization and the queue length are by far the two most popular metrics that people watch for.
Yep.
But that's not all. You can also do custom operands. You can actually make Wasabi react to your own metrics, which actually have meaning to your business. So here I define things like number of active surveys and number of tenants that I have there. So, in fact, you know what, let me switch to the RI, which we also ship, and you get the full source code as well with that.
Yeah.
But it's just a little bit easier to see how Wasabi works because it gives me the web UI. And what you see here is that I just switched to Tailspin Management Portal, where I can basically go and look at the same rules that you've seen in XML, but here we have a a UI to see as soon as my machine wakes up. And there we go. So you can see my list here, mm-hmm. and everything grayed out are the ones that are disabled, and that was the rule that I told you.
Yes.
When I want to have low cost,
I just enable that one.
Yeah, and it's just a
rank 500.
You see, I defined a higher one for us today, so I would have to change this to like 1,000 or something. So you can see that I have a whole bunch of different rules. I have the default ones. I have the ones during the peak hours, but there is another one that I just defined just for us, so that I wanted to, between this and this to provision 3 to 8, just in case. You know, I had no idea if people would be watching this live. So what if they decide to go and bombard our site with all those requests?
We do have a live studio audience.
Oh, we do. Yes.
People usually can't see that.
Well, but they can see the Earl there. So if I were to go and look at the monitoring chart here, in fact, these are all my roles that I can monitor. In this case, I was actually autoscaling public websites. So let's just take a look at that one. Over the last 2 hours, you can see what's happened. Actually, let me just grab a little bit more because I've simulated a little bit of more load prior to coming to the studio. So you can see what was happening. The light blue band is effectively your constraint rules.
Yep.
That's a minimum 2, maximum 5, minimum 3, maximum 6, and that was the one that I just increased, 3 to 8, during the show. And then you can see all these blue steps. This is the actual number of instances for this role. So you can see this is the moment where the decision was made. Sometimes there's a little bit of time because it takes time to provision an extra thing. If I were to click on it, you would see a lot of useful stuff. This is actually all the diagnostic information that you can slice and dice any way you want and get a lot of information where you are trying to do troubleshooting or where you're trying to figure out why did it not scale, right?
So is this using the same diagnostics API as
exactly the same one, yeah.
Gotcha.
But the thing that I should mention is that the way Wasabi works, actually, there are two separate processes in there, one that is in charge of data collection and another one is in charge of rule evaluation and issuing the orders. And you can actually stop your rule evaluation and issuing orders while the data collection will continue getting all those data and aggregating them. So if for some reason you don't want to do the autopilot and you want to take control over, you can just pause this temporarily. You can have a global switch or you can have the switch on the individual targets or individual rules. So you can see here that was the case that we actually, these were all the rules that matched, which resulted in the decision that you need to scale down from 5 to 4.
Great.
Right? And then you can see the corresponding CPU load that we were monitoring and making the decision based on.
Question for you. One thing when I start thinking about autoscaling, in particular when you're looking at performance counters and the like, is how do you go about really understanding what sort of metrics that you want to be responding to? So essentially, you know, understanding, well, these are the, you know, you have a bunch of rules defined and actions and so forth. You know, if I'm building my own application, how do I go about really understanding when I should start taking action? And I'm curious, being part of Patterns and Practices, as part of the autoscaling application block, do you guys also have some guidance?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up, because some people may mistakenly believe that you just go ahead and you configure your rules once with something maybe like default and that's it, and you kind of fire and forget it.
Yep.
It's not the case. We believe that you actually need to, if you want to run your systems, your apps efficiently, if you are cost conscious, if you want to make sure that, you know, that you meet the SLAs and all of it, you need to be constantly monitoring.
Yep.
Okay? And you can monitor it through Wasabi, you can monitor it through other tools that the Azure or the System Center, for example, provides. But the important thing is that you have to be on top of it. You need to see what importance to you. You need to go and look for, oh my gosh, why do I have this spike? Why is it that suddenly, for all this time, even though the number of HTTP requests coming to my site is like 1 or 2 or whatever, it went down, but the CPU utilization is still so high. Then that gives you some clues of what you should go underneath and, you know, and research and investigate. But it's definitely an iterative thing. At least at the beginning, we envisioned that, and that's not only with the developers. You actually need to go back to the business and ask, okay, what matters to you?
Right.
What do you
what
want us to
SLAs?
Do?
Yeah,
exactly.
The
and then you go back, you refine them, you can do it again. Some people may build a portal, like management portal, like this one, and incorporate it into their overall administration portal, and then you go and you fine-tune and you tweak those rules, and eventually you get it to the point where it operates the way you expect.
So that's really useful. It also occurs to me that as part of the monitoring and kind of understanding the baseline so that you know how to make changes, is even things like how often do you want to be collecting performance counters? Because certainly you could go to an extreme and say, tell me what the CPU is every 2 seconds. That's you're probably incurring a couple of not only performance penalties, but a cost associated with all the data you're
going to
be collecting.
Especially if you're storing it. Exactly, yes. Yeah. So the default one is like, I think, every 2 minutes or so.
So you guys provide some kind of defaults or guidance, just because honestly, it begs the question, how often do you really need to...
That's what people asked us for. So that's why for most of the... I wasn't even showing you the operational configuration, because most of it looked like there's a lot of knobs, but it's because we want to give you all the flexibility. Yeah. But we provide all the meaningful defaults, and you can just start from there and see if it's really need to be changed to something else. There's one other thing that I want to mention briefly here is a feature that we built into Wasabi, which we call kinetic stabilizer or optimizing stabilizer. Forget the word kinetic, not to confuse people.
I forgot it.
Stabilizer. The idea is that you know how the billing model works for Azure. You get charged, you know, regardless whether you use the full hour or if you only use 5 minutes of it, right?
Yep.
So what people ask us to do was, to have some means of incorporating into the rules the configuration so that it would only scale up during the first 10 minutes of the hour, so you can take advantage of the whole hour, or scale down at the last 10 or 15
minutes. Don't scale me up for 5 minutes and shut down since I'm paying for the whole hour
anyway. And vice versa. If I already paid for the hour, even if my vital signs have come down, but I already paid for this instance, I might as well just use them till the end of the hour. That's one reason you would want to use the stabilizer. Another reason you would want to use the stabilizer is that you can see that the trend of what the metric that you're monitoring could be quite very, very high oscillation pattern there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to go and this minute say, okay, I'm going up. Then 5 minutes later, I'm going down, up, down, up, down, because that's not very smart way of running your infrastructure. So you can actually put the cooldown period and say, after the last scaling action, wait for 15 minutes or half an hour, or you can define whatever you want before you make the next scaling action. And when I'll be making my next scaling action, I'm going to take all the data that's actually been collected in the last hour or 15 minutes, whatever, as an aggregate and make a wiser decision. So I will end up with not having this yo-yo thing. So
that's
something that's also very useful, and people asked for it. And originally we actually cut it from the backlog, but after the beta was shipped, people were saying, no, we need it. Bring it back.
That's great.
So
cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, this looks fabulous. As a reminder, so people can get it from Nuget. Nuget seems to be a great way to get it.
Yep.
There's a download center, so you can download the bits.
You can get all the things. You can get the source separately.
Yep.
You can get the RI right here. You also have the commandlets. I forgot to mention that, similar to the Windows Azure commandlets. If you have your admins who want to be able to manipulate Wasabi without even having Visual Studio, they can do that.
Great.
And then you can encrypt it too. That's a smart thing to do, especially if you're going to be sending your rules, across the wire before saying that, based on the rules, you may actually derive some competitive information. So people want to do that. So there's a set of commandlets. The other thing that the commandlets allow you to do is just to do the global switch when you want to say, okay, auto-scaling off, auto-scaling on, or you can do, again, an individual rule on-off. And then the binaries you can get here as well.
Great.
Then you have a lot of... learning resources, so on MSDN, on CodePlex. You can even go, you can see how important autoscaling is to the Windows Azure product group itself. If you were to go to the WindowsAzure.com, to the main portal, and then under development and .NET, you would see that autoscaling is actually listed as one of the core services, along with Service Bus and caching and other ones. And actually, when you click on that, it will actually point and give you a very quick tutorial on how to get going.
This is a great introduction to it right here.
And then we have a dev guide, the typical blue books that you've seen the patterns and practices ship. This one is dedicated to Wasabi and actually to one other block. We haven't talked about it today, but we ship the transient fault handling application block together.
Which we've covered on another show.
Yeah. So we've strengthened it. We're now supporting async pattern. There's a lot more than what was there when you covered it back then, but it's all covered really well here. And the last thing in terms of the guidance, before I forget, we have a set of hands-on labs.
Mm.
14 hands-on labs, extremely comprehensive, start to finish. You get the source before, you get the source after. You go through all those steps. And those labs teach you a lot of things. Like, you know, if you want to have a metric, some people ask us, oh, what about the, you know, the queue of the server, the length of the service bus queue or something like that. We don't ship it in the box, but we teach you how you can do that because it's really easy.
Yep.
And we also give you an opportunity to define your own custom operand. So don't forget about the hands-on labs. They're really, really good. I'm extremely proud of of the effort the team did building those. So
that's great. Cool. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate that.
Excellent.
So, all right. So it's the time of the show where we introduce the tip of the week.
Ah.
And actually, it's kind of exciting today. Usually, we challenge Bob to do something interesting. We sometimes give him an idea, but I mentioned the live studio audience.
Yeah.
Bob is actually in the audience, in the studio. So why don't we just why don't we invite Bob out here, and we'll have Bob introduce the tip of the week.
So.
And here he is in the flesh, Bob.
Wed.
Good to have you on the show finally. So.
You got to work on your enthusiasm there.
Just to kind of bring it down a notch.
Yeah.
So Bob, as you guys are aware, is really the brains and the humor and behind the show.
So. I actually am more comfortable behind the show, behind the scenes, because you guys do such a great job. I mean, I don't even know what a nougat is. So
it's a highly technical thing. We don't have time to get into it right now.
I figure any large company that has blob storage, the rules change. I can do anything I want. You know.
Cool. So do you have any thoughts for tip of the week today? You want to challenge yourself?
Well, George Clooney can't make it.
We tried.
Julia was available, but now she's not. But I think since this could be your last gig here,
in fact it is,
we may just kind of go in that direction, and we'll just see what we can come up with.
So I'll be excited to see what what we have tomorrow. So with that, here's your tip of the week.
In actual introduction of Wade has been the man in Chicago for quite some time, working on a whole bunch of technologies. Super smart guy.
Look at that.
Cool. All right, good. I have no idea how it works. My uncle had ducks that he named Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's.
Do we have a wired connection here?
Right. Hey, you guys were so nice to me last time I was on the show.
Yeah.
I prepared something for you, and then you just bleep it out. And then when he comes back in, you guys are just kind of going...
That wasn't funny, Wade. That was my cat.
I don't even know who that is, so...
You don't know who Katy Perry is.
Okay, so we're obviously cutting this part, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Gotta find me someone whose heart is free, someone to look for my dream with me. And when I find her, I may find out.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive.
Hey, I think I can see the campus down there.
Yeah, those things look like ants down there.
No, those are people, Steve.
Oh,
not ants.
Okay. Wow. Flying sure is fun. Whoa, I want to do a trick, too. Mid-air high five. I'm scared of this. Okay, we should actually do the show, though.
Yeah. All right, so this week's tip of the week. I believe last week we covered the fact that we shipped the Microsoft Endpoint Protection for Windows Azure. And this is actually pretty cool. So it gives you the ability to provide both virus scanning as well as anti-malware scanning within your Windows Azure instances.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a fabulous post that you should take a look at. Ilias goes in detail. Ilias is one of the SDEs on the team. Great guy. Actually chatted with him today to talk through some stuff. But take a look at his post. It's up on the Windows Azure blog. I wanted to show a couple of different things here to demonstrate it in action because I think it's pretty cool. Let me just show you a couple of things. First of all, if you want to go and download it, very, very easy to do. Just make sure you have in Visual Studio, you've got the SDK and the tools for Visual Studio installed. Mm-hmm. Only prerequisites. And you can grab this EPP plugin right here. Now, what it is it's an actual Windows Azure plugin. So one thing to note with the plugin is, if you go and take a look under Program Files in the Windows Azure SDK, and you take a look at bin and then plugins, you'll actually see all your plugins listed here. And so this is kind of the behind-the-scenes look at how this works. When you install this plugin, you'll get the anti-malware plugin added here. And if you look in the folder, this is really all the stuff that makes it work. So what a plugin really is it's just a way of wrapping up a set of startup tasks and some other things that get updated within your CSDEF and CFG. Mm-hmm. So this is really the magic and how it works. We can take a look at a couple of things. So when you turn on the plugin within your application, here are the details. You can see that essentially there's a startup task that runs and installs EPP into the instance, and then there's a policy tool that runs and gets everything configured. And you can see simple, if you remember the task types, we've covered this in the past, simple essentially means that until the startup task finishes executing, your instance will never be available through the load balancer. So it'll stay busy until this process is completed, whereas background lets it run in the background even and essentially will be available through the load balancer. So you can see that's here, and then there's a bunch of different configuration settings. The blog post goes through everything in detail. I'll let it provide some of the background. I'll just show you what I've built here. So I've got very simple web role. Actually, I've done nothing to the web role. And then if you take a look at the CSDEF, I've imported the module. So I've got the anti-malware module imported. So that when I go and create the CSPKG, all those things we just saw in the anti-malware folder will get consumed by the CSPKG and the startup tasks will be registered and so forth. Mm-hmm. And then in my configuration, you can see I've got all the different settings and different things that you can tweak. And there's quite a few of them. There are default values for all of them. And in most cases, you won't want to change them. But there's a couple here that I did change. For instance, you'll see that for the service location, I specified North Central US. By default, it's South Central. And the reason you might want to specify it is if you're deploying to one of the data centers, it's better to just choose the correct service location, because then you're not downloading the bits that get installed from a different data center. Because honestly, this way, it's within the data center. Free. There's no additional costs incurred. It's faster, so forth. And then you can change other things as well. Yeah. Once that's set, the next thing you really want to do is set up some diagnostics information so that if certain things occur, like let's say it discovers a virus or something is downloaded or whatever might happen, I mean, just something that would trigger an event that you'd want to capture, what you can do here is in your web role, I've just got a very simple thing described here, but essentially you can see what I've done is I've grabbed the default initial configuration, which is basically just my diagnostics information for this application, and I've added a data source that essentially will come through, identify things for anti-malware, and then set some level information.
And then you just push it through the Windows event log?
Yep, and essentially set up a transfer period, and then I do a start transfer, and I specify my connection string. So essentially what's going to happen is when an event is triggered that will be logged, it's going to use the same diagnostics pattern and dump it into a Windows Azure table, and I'll be able to take a look at it there. So here's the app that I've got. I've actually already deployed it, so it's running up in Windows Azure, and you can see here I've got RDP enabled, so I've been able to remote in. What you'll notice in the lower right hand corner, unfortunately Zoom It and those sorts of things aren't working right now, but I've actually got it set up and running. So I mean, it deployed, everything, got set up and running in the background, and you can see now that my instance is protected. Pretty cool. One thing that's kind of fun to show here is that what I want to do is I want to show what happens when a virus actually is encountered and how it gets logged. So to do that, one of the things I first have to do is turn off the real-time protection or I can't download my virus. So let me, I don't do this at home, but it's an interesting thing to see. What I'm going to do is I'm going to come to my configuration.
Did you write your virus yourself too?
What's that?
Did you write the virus yourself too?
I did not. No. So Ilias provided me with a fake virus.
Oh, okay. Got it.
So this may be a hard thing for you to do at home unless you have access
just
to a fake virus. Just watch the video. what I'm going to do here is actually come over to enable real-time protection and set this to false.
Yep.
And what's nice here is even though I'm updating the CFCFG, it's actually not going to restart or do anything to my instance. It's set up as an active listener, so The anti-malware software will just note that there was a change in the configuration, and it will change the real-time status to false and turn it off. So
it just turns it off. It does not install it.
It does not uninstall it. It doesn't do anything else. All I'm doing is just turning off the real-time monitoring. So this may take a couple of minutes. What we'll do is we'll come back here and we'll do some magic stuff so that it accelerates the period. But it generally takes, you know, a minute or two to occur. And you may have just missed it, but returned to red. So
nice.
You see that with changes. All right, so now let's go get our virus. I actually put the virus.
Do you have your evil hat or something like with horns or just the look?
So I've got it here. This is a public container, but I guarantee that it will not be there once the show is published. So don't try to grab it, folks. So there's the URL. And again, just so you guys know, the reason I had to turn off the protection was it wouldn't even let me download this
because it'll scan the download
and it'll prevent it from occurring. All right. So now I've got my virus. Now I could go back to the CFCFG and turn the real-time protection back on, but I can also this is just for the demo. Rather than waiting a few minutes longer, what I'm going to do is just go ahead and turn it on right here. All right. So now the real-time protection is back on. And before I go and do something that'll cause it to, you know, trigger an event, let me just show you. I've got, my table storage set up here and my anti-malware demo. Now, it's set to collect the diagnostics information every minute. So there will be a slight delay from when it occurs. But what we should see here is a table created and then logged within it. So, all right. Can't open it. Gosh, I hate protection.
It's denied.
Jeez. So we'll do that a couple of times. All right. And at some point in the next minute, we should see
this table
being created and then some data in it. So,
The one other thing that I wanted to mention is that with the endpoint protection, is it going to go and do the updates to the virus definitions automatically, or do you have to modify something in the config?
Yep. So by default, it will pull down virus update definitions. You don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. So you just deploy this plugin once, and there you go.
Yep. And while we're waiting for this as well, one other thing to note is this isn't CTP. It's a CTP, there's no go live. You know, there's no actual production support for today. So presumably at some point, and hopefully in the near future, this will actually be available as a production plugin and not just as a CTP.
But still, I think many of our customers would appreciate the trend.
Yeah.
Where we're going with this. Oh, there it is.
And so I just did a refresh, and here it is. And let's go ahead and you can take a look. You know, we were able to log the Microsoft anti-malware, got some information about it, and it's detected something... the ECAR test file. So,
and it's a severe one, too.
Is it severe?
Severity severe.
Oh, yes. Yeah. It's one of the worst. there you have it. So pretty neat. So hopefully that's a useful bit of info. So kind of bittersweet, last cloud cover. So for me, and I should say.
Wait a second. So just to qualify that, is it going to be the continuation of the show?
I'm sure. So... cloud cover, I mean, if you think about cloud cover, there's been one thing that's provided some sort of continuity across all the shows, and that's Bob. And Bob's not going anywhere. So regardless, cloud cover will continue to exist. There's still a lot of great things to say about Windows Azure and a lot of interesting things to dig into. Most likely, there'll be a small hiatus as people, figure out some things. And you might see the show format change a little bit, but cloud cover will certainly stick around. So,
but what's up for you in the future? You mentioned that you're going to still do something with Azure?
My family's moving to Colorado. I think I mentioned it last week. I'll work for a partner from Colorado, and we'll do a lot of great stuff with Windows Azure. And
so then maybe, sometime in the future you'll come back as a guest as opposed to the host.
That'd be great.
Yeah, let's do that. So, that would be great.
So cool. Yeah. So if you have any comments, feedback, you want to communicate with us, you can do so at Cloud Cover Show on Twitter. Gregory, are you on
Twitter? Yeah, G Melnick. G Melnick, G-M-E-L-N-I-K.
Wonderful, and we'll get that somewhere right here.
Thank you.
And Yeah, really appreciate it. It's been great. Thanks for joining me on my last show.
It's been great having you as a colleague.
And
thanks. We're all going to miss you here at Microsoft. And at least the good news is that you're going to stay with Windows Azure and do more greatness and goodness.
Hopefully.
For the platform and for the customers. So.
Thanks. Great.
Fantastic.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you, sir. And thank you very much.
Thank you.